Okay, let's start the, first I want to put my disclaimer. I don't have my reading glasses. It's 3:02, Design Review Board for February 12th, 2013. Can we have the call meeting to the order, please? Roll call, I mean.
Thank you. Member Carroll?
Here.
Member Herrera? Member Snyder?
Here.
Member Smith?
Here.
Member Wignott?
Here.
Vice Chair Branch?
Here.
Chair Messner?
Here. Okay, from there we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, administrative agenda. Meeting minutes for January 22nd, 2003.
I'll move to approve minutes.
I'll second.
Okay. Any comments? Question? Bob?
On page 5, under the motion item number 1, second sentence, I'd like to change that slightly. So the sentence reads, the bench is there. Should not be located in the immediate proximity of the residences rather than residents. That's all I had.
Anybody else? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. B2, Planning Director's Report.
Okay, thank you, Chair Messner and members of the board. I have a very short report for you today. Since your last meeting, the City Council has met on February 5th, and on that day they had a couple of interviews and appointments set up. So we're happy to know that with this board in mind, Member Smith and Member Herrera have been reappointed to the board, and we now get to welcome a new face. Aaron Carroll is stepping in. For us. I'll let Aaron introduce himself in just a second. I want to give you some very quick background on you. He is one of our ASLA, our landscape architects, and comes to us via Arcadia Studios. He's been before you a few times with a couple different projects now, but he's also a local product, starting off in Ventura and slowly coming up this way, going to Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. And we're pleased to have him on board. But with that, Aaron, I'll go ahead and turn it over to yourself to say hello to the board.
Thanks, Scott. I introduced myself there once for Bob.
You're a familiar face, but on the side of the table now.
And I look forward to serving with all of you.
Good. Excellent.
So to continue with that, one of the really minor reshufflings that we had as we were looking at the three positions to get reappointed before the council, we ran into a residency requirement slash issue. So Simone's position has officially changed from a landscape professional position to the at-large position. It doesn't change his ability to participate in any function of the board whatsoever. But in doing so and filling Cecilia Brown's position, he's at a term that now expires January 31st, 2015, and the other two positions are the three-year terms, as which would expire as of January 31st, 2016. So just so everyone's on board with what has happened and where we are and who we are, that's the full report I can give to you. The reason why I share the expiration dates is as we think about the chair's position that we're about to vote on and the voting in of the vice chair, sometimes that's on various DRB members' minds on how long someone's going to be in a particular position. So just some food for thought. Also on February 5th, the City Council did reappoint Commissioner Sheeler and Commissioner Wallace to the City's Planning Commission, so that board stays consistent with what had previously been. Also on February 5th, the City Council began their interview process for the Parks and Rec commissioners. As anticipated, a number of appointments and interviews will continue over to the February 19th City Council meeting. And at that same date, we're anticipating that they're going to be doing their interviews and appointments for the Public Tree Advisory Commission. I mentioned a few minutes ago that we do have elections today for our chair and vice chair position. Following that, we'll do a reshuffling, perhaps, of our consent designee as well as our signed subcommittee members. And the only other thing I get to share with you is we do have our SB Empower presentation happening today at 3:30. So with that, that concludes the chair's report.
Okay. Bob?
Scott, you gave us a list of design review board meetings for 2013, and that had been revised somewhat from a previous list that you had generated. And I'm just wondering, when you have the opportunity, could you resend the final list in electronic file format?
Yeah, that's not a problem. The only change that had happened from the prior list to the new list was a switching the August date.
Right.
But yeah, we'll go ahead and make sure that everyone has that,
okay.
the current revised list.
Thank you.
Okay. B3. I can hardly read it. Election of officers. Bob?
Mr. Chair, I've been given this a little bit of reflection, and I just wanted to make a comment before we actually get into nominating officers. This sort of goes to what Scott just said about reshuffling of positions because of residency. And the Design Review Board has been legislatively created by the City Council to serve the interests of the City of Goleta. The officers that we appoint, chair, vice chair, they have the discretion to work with staff and set the agenda for the meetings. The chair runs the meeting, affords design review board members, staff, and the public the opportunity and time to comment on agenda items. So it's my opinion, and I'm going to propose that you consider whether or not the officers of the design review board should be individuals that are 100% committed to the City of Goleta, and by that I mean who are city residents. And I would like to suggest that going forward we have an unwritten rule that the chair of the meeting be a city resident, and at some point that be codified in the Design Review Board bylaws and guidelines, as is the case with the public at-large member positions have to be city residents. There's also a requirement that a quorum of city residents has to be present to take action on items. So, you know, no disrespect to the people on the board that are not city residents, but I just think that it's something we should consider in making these appointments, whether or not we're better served by having the position filled by a city resident. So with that, I'll conclude.
I would like to nominate Scott Branch as the chair for the next year for Design Review Board chair.
I'd like to second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm going to vote no based on what I previously said. Also, Member Herrera is not here to vote today, so but I seem to be in the minority on that one, so it probably doesn't make much difference whether he's here or not. But I'm going to vote no.
I didn't vote on that. Can I vote?
Sure.
So I'll vote for.
Congratulations, Chair Branch. one of the past practices we've had is giving the former chair the ability to continue chairing through this meeting if the chair so desires. If not, we could have an official changing of the guard at the chair's, former chair's discretion.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay. Well, if we're gonna change, then
do we have a motion for vice? Who's up on?
Well, if we're changing, then let's go ahead and actually do the changing and let Scott take over from this point, and we'll put in nominations for the vice chair. And thank you, Chair Messner, for all your service.
Thank you, and I will do my best to make you proud, Bob. And I will do my best for the city of Goleta.
I have a house in western Goleta. All
right. Item B4, appointment to subcommittees. Actually,
we do vice chair.
We need vice chair first. Sorry about that.
I would like to nominate Bob Wignott.
I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Discussion? Nope. Okay, item B4, appointment to subcommittees.
I would like to volunteer for sign subcommittee again. If possible.
As will I.
Excellent.
And that, yeah, that board is usually best served by three persons, just in case someone is absent. So if we could have another volunteer or a suggested appointment, that would be appreciated.
I was a alternate before, and transportation prior to three is an issue for me, so I would rather not do that if possible.
I'll volunteer.
How about throwing a new guy in the deep end here?
There we go.
Okay, so Tom and Carl and Aaron.
Okay, let's go ahead and have an official vote.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And that is for three positions rather than two plus the alternate, right? I think you were the alternate because Cecilia had.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of
right.
A special deal.
It works better with three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Which we're going to find out shortly.
Okay. With that, we'll move to item B5, Green Building Program.
I don't know how long this presentation is, but just so everybody knows, this one sign item that we heard today, we want to bring before the whole board. And the applicant is sitting here waiting, so I don't know if we can squeeze that in before the presentation or not, or how that all works. But
the presentation we actually identified as a time certain at 3:30 p.m. So we've got a little bit of time. There were two items that were on your agenda. First and foremost is your signed calendar report, and then following up with that is your revised final calendar. And the thought process with the 3:30 time frame is we can get both of those accomplished prior to the start of the SB Empower presentation. So if we can do a review of agenda and projected agenda.
Perfect.
Thank you. So review of this agenda. We have a 3:30 time certain presentation. No other continuances whatsoever on this agenda whatsoever. And as we look forward to your future agendas, they're still fairly light. So if there is a need to continue anything to a future agenda item, there's more than enough room to do so. And that concludes our review of this agenda as well as projected agenda.
Okay, thank you. Item D, public comment. This time the public has an opportunity to comment on any non-agenda items relevant to jurisdiction of the city. It is requested each speaker complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording clerk. Does anybody in the audience wish to speak at this time? I see none, so we will move to nothing on the consent calendar. We'll move to item F, the assigned calendar.
Thank you.
Well,
Let me just start. I'll give a quick background of how we've gotten to this point here today. So this is revised final for case number 12072. It's an overall sign plan for 5880 Kyrielle. The design review board approved this project on July 24th, 2012, and they approved the overall sign plan. Recently, we've had an application for a revised final for that overall sign plan, and specifically it's regarding maximum letter heights for the general tenant. The general tenant at that complex is Yogurtland, which will be coming forward in the near future. And they're requesting an increase in the maximum letter height. I'll let the agent come up, Warren. You can come on up.
Daryl, I've got the extra. There's three extra copies here, so I can.
Great.
And you might have to look on with us.
And maybe, Carl, maybe I'll hand it over to you to explain the situation, what happened with the sub, with the science subcommittee, and why it's going before the whole board.
Okay. Back in, see if I can find my paperwork here. As Daryl just mentioned, I don't see it. Last year sometime we approved as a sign subcommittee an overall sign program that included three descriptions for tenants, an anchor tenant, a primary tenant, and a general tenant for this building. That was all done and approved with documentation which we have here. The anchor tenant, the Bank of Santa Barbara, has moved in. The primary tenant, Limos, has moved in, and Yogurt is now going to be the general tenant. And they are underway in doing construction, as I understand it. They have shown up today with a sign that exceeds what the overall sign program allowed. So they originally presented a 20-inch tall text. The OSP requires it be only 12 inches tall, and they have also submitted a kind of in-between one at 16 inches. So there are two questions on the table. One is, do we want to allow exceeding of this OSP that was approved last year to allow this particular tenant to have a larger sign than what was anticipated? And two, discussion centering around whether the text and images presented are considered a logo or a sign. Basically what happened at Science Subcommittee, with only two members being present, myself and Tom, we came to a disagreement as to what should be allowed, and so we decided to bring it before the full board for your input and discussion and decision.
I have a question. What were the three classifications of tenants for this were what again?
Anchor tenant, which was the Bank of Santa Barbara. Primary tenant, which is Limos Pet Supply. And general, in theory, in that order, is also how the size goes.
And what was that?
Tenant. But the reality of it is the anchor tenant was allowed, I forget exactly what size.
16-inch
letters, and both, right, and both the primary and the anchor were restricted to 12 inches.
No, well, the Pet Supply has no wall sign; they have a
monument sign
out front.
Right,
and, you know, and that's pretty good exposure for the Pet Supply. What we're concerned about, as far as Yogurtland is concerned, is the visibility or the lack thereof, you know, being maintained at that 12-inch tall lettering.
So, just so I understand, so the anchor tenant and the primary tenants, well, I guess all three tenants in the OSP are allowed 12-inch heights.
No, the anchor tenant, the bank, is allowed 16.
So they're allowed 16.
Mm-hmm. The other two are allowed 12.
No, they can't, because they have a monument sign. That excludes the fact of a wall sign there.
Can I see that for a minute?
Yeah. So I thought.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
So the primary tenant does not have a wall sign. In the overall sign plan, they were approved for only a monument sign.
But the lettering on the monument sign was restricted to 12 inches.
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I do want to make
clarification.
I do want to make clarification on the anchor tenant size too. So, per the overall sign plan, they were allowed a maximum square footage of 40 feet for their wall sign.
The primary?
The anchor. Which okay. is the Bank of Santa Barbara. And the maximum letter height for that is 12 inches, but they were allowed two lines of copy. So just to put that clear, it is not 16 inches, it's 12 inches.
No, I measured.
Yeah, but per the overall sign plan, it's 12 inches.
Oh, not 16?
Two lines of copy, and each copy could not exceed 12 inches.
Okay. Yeah. And you said one of the tenants installed 16-inch?
I don't know that. Applicant saying that the bank is...
Right. I measured the front and the back,
yeah.
And the front's lettering was 16-inch as I measured it.
Oh, so this is not...
We have approved the wall sign for the Bank of Santa Barbara, and it was 12 inches, the plans that we approved.
Okay, I'm talking... That's what I'm talking about, what was approved, not
yeah.
what...
Oh, no, they're more than 12.
No, it was done. Okay.
Yeah, the plans we approved for that wall sign was two lines of copy, 12 inches each. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so what's approved, everybody gets 12 inches, and...
There's a secondary thing, that, like Carol mentioned, the second one. The second item kind of comes into play because this is on page 4 of the overall sign plan. Section C, item 1, wall signs under general tenant signage, which I think is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Maximum letter height shall be 12 inches with the maximum logo height shall be 24 inches. Mm-hmm. And that's the question is,
yeah.
is this text or is this a logo?
So let me kind of explain typically what we've done in the past in terms of registered trademark signs. If it is registered trademarked, we consider it a logo and text. Now, that's really not clarified in the overall sign plan. So I know, and maybe I'll hand this over to Mr. Colwitz to explain what's happened in the past, but that's my understanding.
If it's a registered trademark, it's logo and text? What does that mean?
In this case, their actual registered logo, the registered trademark appears. It has a little circle R next to it.
Right.
It appears to be one and the same thing. Sometimes you would have a logo that would simply be a graphic depiction of something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the actual words are the thing that have the registered trademark.
Or your Supercuts is a registered trademark. Your hair cutting place, because it's got an R.
What we don't have in the file at this point in time is the actual documentation showing that here is the registered trademark itself. There's a process to go through that. Our applicants routinely give that to us. But the plans that have been, even though we don't have that extra documentation, the plans that have been presented do have the Circle R. Yogurtland is a national franchisee.
I can get that for you easily.
So we can follow up with that. But that's some additional information for the board to consider.
So can I just ask a question? So, Scott, based on what you just said, that potentially a 24-inch logo height would be acceptable, provided that the overall square footage didn't exceed 24 square feet?
Per this overall sign that's been approved, that's correct. But one of the things that we also look at with logos are the maximum dimensions. And as dimensioned currently, when we look at text by itself, it's typically the capital letters letter height we would look at.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at logos, it's the full breadth of the height. So in this one, if you were to draw your lines on Yogurtland, the text itself.
From the top of the Y to the bottom of the G?
Correct. That looks like it's going to be more than 24 inches is what
I see. Okay.
Presume without having a scale in front of me.
There are also two other alternatives, or an alternative, and, well, I'll let the applicant explain.
So maybe, Warren, maybe you can explain your alternatives to besides the 20 inches?
Well, I would suggest...
By the way, if you haven't done so already, introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, my name is Warren. I'm with Nightlight Signs. We do all the Yogurtlands throughout the country. I submitted the 20-inch, basically, because it fills in, you know, we were kind of like restricted because of the design of the building itself. And behind the wall where this sign is the pet supply store. So we have to put in an external wireway there. And there is a electrical box on the wall coming from the Yogurtland store, and we were trying to cover up that box so that it doesn't show. If it gets much smaller than the 20-inch, I don't know. I can't guarantee that it will be covered up. I have some dimension someplace that shows. Well, let me just double-check. I think I might have it here. Maybe not. There we go. Not if I can see correctly. Yeah, it's a little over 3 feet down.
Right.
And 34 inches in from the inset of the wall. You know, so it's got, you know, it's not... You know, it's like almost like 3x3. So, you know, we're trying to cover that up so that it would not be seen from the street.
Do we know what the dimension is from the bottom line of the text to the bottom of the G?
Yeah, it's 32 inches.
32 inches, okay.
We might want to clarify which one because we all have before us. We have the one that was originally in our packet where it shows the Y being 20 inches high. Mm-hmm. And then the applicant also gave us one where the Y is 12 inches high.
Okay.
And a representation. And then came up with an alternative when we were meeting of 16. So okay. The 32 would be the one with the 20-inch high Y. That would be the 32 overall, I believe.
Yeah, the 32, Scott, is from the top of the Y to the bottom of the G. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Not from the...
In the 20-inch version.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So some proportion there is... Okay.
But you're reducing the... at 16 inches, you're reducing it down by 4 inches.
So what you're saying is if you have the 16-inch height on the Y, that the portion of the G that's below the line is about 8 inches?
Mm-hmm.
For a total overall... Of 24?
24 inches, yes. And, you reduce the height, everything reduces down.
Right. So the two members of the sign subcommittee that viewed this previously and had some difference of opinion, did you want to share that with us?
It's as simple as I was looking at it as all text and wanting to limit it to 12 inches, and Tom was willing to... allow exceeding the 12-inch in the OSP and go to something above 12, and we can probably better explain that.
Okay, yeah, I disagree with Carl because, to me, this is a logo. Yes, it's in English and it's in, you know, European, Western European letters, but the font is unique to the business. It's also adds as part of the font, they add the leaves, the little pink dots inside the looped letters, and it's a registered trademark. And so my feeling is that the one that was submitted, the 20-inch high one, is too big for that space. But a verbatim reading of the ordinance and considering it text with a 12 inches high, I thought was too small. And so that's why I disagreed, and I thought the 16-inch version would work because it seems to fit the requirements for the logo. So,
does the 16-inch version cover the electric box that you're talking about?
I can't guarantee that right up front. If nothing else, if it does not cover, we'll have to put a cover plate on it and run a piece of EMT into the wireway. But that would be painted the same color as the front building. That's the only way we can do it if we can't cover it with the box itself.
I would like to also, just for clarification, too, Carl went to the site and looked at it and based his decisions accordingly. I did not specifically go there to look at it. It's just this is a building I go by every day. So I didn't. He has the advantage of actually being there and looking at it.
With this in
with mind. This in mind.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add at this point?
Personally, I would like to see the 16-inch for various reasons. Number one, from my point of view as a sign man, the 12 inches is just not big enough to be legible from a car driving down the street there. 20-inch, honestly, the client wants as big as possible. In the sign trade, that's always the case. Excuse me. I, on the other hand, do a little of both, the biggest I can get, but with aesthetics put in place at the same time. And I prefer the 16-inch personally because it's not too big and therefore not gaudy, and it fits in better with the building itself. And also it's more legible. And considering the fact that it is a logo, it is a registered trademark, I can get paperwork if you people want to see it. It's happened before. But, you know, we have the R on there for that reason.
Okay.
Another question.
Sure.
And another question that I have is that this, the shape of the sign, it's not a rectangular box. It's actually individually formed
letters.
Letters.
Yes.
So.
But it's mounted on a box. Because that's what we call the raceway or the wireway that houses all the jumpers.
That's this.
Right.
So that's the box.
Right, but the form of the sign itself is going to mimic the
letters.
The letters, the contour of the letters. So
right.
It's more of a contoured shape than a rectangular shape that you're viewing from the street.
Okay.
Yeah, they're individual channel letters, except in this case the GU are connected and the TLA is connected, but the rest of it is all individual. So it's just as you see the text.
So, I mean, the shape that will be on the wall will be that text shape, not a rectangular
correct.
Shape.
Correct.
Is what I'm correct. What I'm suggesting.
Correct.
Okay. So I guess that's another thing that we could consider is that my reading of the overall sign plan says that there could be. The wall sign internally lit shall not exceed 24 square feet. I mean, we actually could be faced with a sign that is twice as large as what they're proposing in square footage, in a sense, right?
Well, trademark versus letter debate notwithstanding.
Every one of these examples is less than that square footage.
Right, right. Okay. All right.
That's because we're limited to just to that one wall space.
Yes. Right.
All right. Any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. How far is this away is the street and sidewalk from this sign?
Well, I honestly don't remember, but I do know that it's up. You know, the street is down here, and the building is up here.
Okay. They're showing.
So you
right
got
now.
A. I'm sorry.
They're showing.
Oh, there.
I would guess this. I'm this is just guessing that sidewalk at the top of the building,
right,
which sets probably 3.5-4 feet above back of sidewalk. The width of that upper sidewalk is probably in the 8 to 10 foot range, and you probably have about that much between the sidewalk and the public sidewalk in where the grade elevation hits,
and the street down
and
below.
Then the street down below. So it's about 20 feet maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you have to you have to look up. Because it's, you know, the street is below eye level. And that, again, that, you know, from a sign person standpoint, you know, that doesn't really lend itself to the smallest letters.
Acknowledged. Okay. Scott?
One last thing. We haven't done declarations for this project, so if we could do those, that'd be fantastic.
All right.
I visited the site and have had no conversation with the applicant.
Thank you.
Same.
I've had no conversation with the applicant, although I'd not specifically been to this site. I've been by it more times than I can possibly count.
I have not visited the site for this project in particular, but I am also familiar with the site, so.
I've been by. Talked to nobody.
I haven't been to the site nor talked to the applicant.
Thank you.
When you're talking about the applicant, are you talking about me?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. So without any more questions, comments. You want to start this way this time?
I think the overall was at the 20, with the 16 and the 8, the 24, pending the verification of the logo. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Bob?
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I think that the dimensions, the 16-inch one fits the space quite well. I know there is a visibility problem there. I've seen previous tenants kind of come and go, and I think getting noticed by the street traffic is problematic with just that one sign location for this general tenant, but they're kind of tied into the OSP in that sense. So I would support the 16-inch one.
Okay. Aaron?
When I first looked at these three options, just scale-wise, I felt that the 16-inch sign fit best. The 12-inch sign might be something you typically more see on a pedestrian-type sidewalk closer. That's mm-hmm. why I asked about that. So I think I could support the 16. I could also support the 12.
Okay. Carl?
I'm wanting to stay with the OSP that was approved and limit it to the 12-inch situation. I understand there's a discrepancy in view as to whether this is a logo or not, and I understand it certainly could be looked at that way. But the number of letters and the to me, it just reads like a bunch of text that's letters and text that's been put together. So I'm on board with staying with the 12-inch limitation.
And I'm remaining with my support for the 16-inch version.
Okay. In looking at the three versions, I could support the 16 as well. I think given how far back it is from the street is sort of what swayed it to me when I saw the site plan up on the screen. And I think what allows me to kind of head that direction is the wiggle room in the OSP about allowing the registered trademark being a logo, and so it can be higher. So I'd be willing to support the 16-inch sign. I guess the 12-inch looks a little bit smaller. One thing I didn't ask is these are lit from inside, right?
Internally illuminated.
Internally illuminated.
LEDs.
Okay. I guess I'll go ahead and make a motion. I would move to approve the 16-inch sign as submitted.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Branch, if we could, while we are over the 3:30 time certain period,
yep.
If we could quickly review the Bluffs residence, I would suggest that for the
I was just going to say, let's. This should be a quick one. Anybody want to make a motion?
Thank you, UM Power.
I'm kidding.
Item G1 is number 13-008-DRB RV01, Bluffs Lot 24, exterior change, 7762 Sora Court.
Mr. Chair, if we could have declarations for this item.
I visited the site, and I have not spoken to the applicant.
I did not visit the site specific for this time around, and I have not spoken to the applicant.
I visited the site, but I have had no conversations.
I did not visit the site this iteration, but I have in the past, and I have not spoken to the applicant.
Same as the chair for me.
The same.
You have the floor.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the board. Tiffany Suke representing RCS The Bluffs. Didn't think I'd be back here. And however, now it's come to realize when we actually put this lot up for sale that there's a better elevation suited for it. Right now, the current lot 24 is a plan 4 farmhouse, color 11. Looking at all the plan 4s, the rustic elevation has a large second story balcony, as you can see from your plans. Whereas, and it's actually 100 square feet, whereas the other two elevations, villa and farmhouse, only have about 10 square foot balconies, like a Juliet balcony. And basically changing this elevation would allow lot 24 to enjoy that amazing view through the open space of lot 67 and also over the two single story lots there right across the street. We're not proposing any change to the plan or color, just the elevation. Since this lot is at the end of the cul-de-sac with only two lots, looking at it, the elevation change has minimal impact for the whole community. And there are no other plan for rustic color 11 elevations at the project, so this house would not be duplicated. And I also brought the color boards in case you want to review the colors, although those are not changing, and I'm available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Shine, do you have anything to throw in?
It's purely aesthetic issue. It's in the board's hands. Thank you.
Any questions from the board?
No.
Comments?
I want to know if it's 12 or 20 inches high.
16.
That being said, I'll move for approval as submitted.
I'll second.
Okay. Perfect. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for everyone bearing with us as we get a 13-minute delay on our presentation today.
Special thanks.
Item B5 is a presentation on the Green Building Program. It's by EM Power SBC.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Cindy Moore from Planning and Environmental Review. And as you heard at, I think, a meeting in December, our Green Building Program took effect on January 1st. And so as part of the city's efforts to promote green building going forward, we're going to try to bring speakers to your board periodically. So if you do have suggestions on topics or particular speakers, please let me know. But today I'm very happy to present you with some representatives from Empower SBC. This is the county's program. And today we have Angie Hacker, who's the program manager, as well as Ashley Watkins, who's the lead for marketing and community outreach. And I will let them tell you all about what's been going on with the program and what's going to be happening very soon here. But I also just wanted to mention, as part of one of the incentives with our green building program, any applicant who was pulling a land use permit for a residential addition, for example, is eligible for a rebate of 50% of those land use permit fees if they complete the Empower program. So that's a good reason for folks to also be interested in it. So with that, I'll introduce Angie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the DRB. Like Cindy said, my name is Angie Hacker. I'm the program manager of Empower SBC. Just wanted to say thank you for having us here today to talk to you a little bit about the county's building efficiency program. I can't compete with a yogurt shop, which sounded pretty good, but I am going to tell you about how Goleta homeowners can make home upgrades that are affordable and can help save them energy. So first, I'm going to go through the high-level goals of Empower SBC, and Ashley is then going to talk a little bit about how it works and a little bit about the measures that are eligible, because I think that's of concern to the DRB. But first, I did want to say thank you to the city, who has been a fantastic partner of Empower SBC. Empower got its start a little over a year ago as a live program. We provide services throughout the county, including all eight cities. And I have to say that Goleta has been one of our best partners. Cindy has been great to work with. She actually sits on our Community Partners Advisory Committee. We just had a meeting today. We, in turn, have sat on the Green Ribbon panel and participated in the development of your great green building program. We've also had a lot of events here in Goleta that have been very successful and well attended, and we've been fortunate to have some promotional help and outreach with the city of Goleta. So a little bit about the high-level goals of Empower. Some of the policies that are driving Empower and why we exist actually come from national, state, and local policies. In California, we know that this is a priority issue. In fact, the Treasurer's Office recently released these statistics. In California, their goal is to reduce consumption of energy by 40% by 2020, just in the residential sector alone. That means 5.8 million homes are likely candidates for a substantial energy retrofit, and that translates into $60 billion of work. $60 billion of work for participating contractors in programs like ours, for the construction industry, who has often struggled during the recession. Upgrades to insulation, duct ceiling, air conditioning, and heating alone can account for 25% reductions in energy consumption throughout the state. So it's with these types of high-level goals in mind that Santa Barbara County really took efficiency very seriously a few years ago, made energy efficiency and job creation an important policy priority at the county. In the legislative platform just released last month, community sustainability and economic sustainability and vitality are mentioned as key priorities. And in fact, when we were last at the board in September, they are fairly happy with what we're doing here at Empower, and they gave us the go-ahead to continue to pursue more funds to continue the program. A little bit more about us, Empower's mission. What do we do exactly? Well, we help the community transform its existing inefficient buildings, and I'm sure you all are familiar. We have some lovely buildings around here, great to live and work in, often charming, but often old, and due for some repair. Why do we do it? To preserve the environment by lowering energy consumption and to stimulate the economy by creating jobs. And how? By developing, leveraging, and promoting innovative voluntary market solutions, like the ones I'll talk to you about, to support a sustainable building performance market. So it's more than about just a couple of programs. It's about transitioning to a marketplace that can actually sustain these types of jobs for homeowners in the future and for other types of sectors. And so there are six main features of Empower SBC service areas. Today we're going to focus specifically mainly on residential financing, which is available now for single-family homes throughout the county and all eight cities. We'll also talk about residential rebates, but we also offer wraparound services including local customer service, humans that actually pick up the phone and can help homeowners through the process that can be oftentimes confusing or daunting, expert energy advising including an energy coach that was recently hired with Empower SBC that can go out and do free home assessments for homeowners and tell them a little bit about what might be useful on their home. workforce development and training, including about 16 trainings over the last year for about 170 building professionals, and marketing, education, and outreach, about 32 events over the last year, workshops all over town. You may have seen our ads. We're kind of everywhere. So here are some local issues that we hear a lot of. We talk to homeowners all the time, and sometimes we find ourselves being home energy therapists, and they tell us all about what's going on in their home. Oftentimes, homes in the community can be leaky and drafty. They might have old or broken systems, little or no insulation, or high utility bills. So we ask ourselves, if that's the case, why aren't homeowners fixing it? And this really gets at the root of why Empower SBC exists. There are several obstacles in the way. One of them is high upfront costs. There's also a lack of affordable or attractive, accessible financing. And homeowners often tell us that they aren't sure how to find qualified, licensed, and trained contractors. So the solution that Empower SBC has come up with and promotes often in all of our workshops throughout town is this slide. We combine rebates up to $4,500 with financing with our local credit union partners, Post Hills, and actually down here would be Ventura County Credit Union, and a list of about 22 participating contractors and counting. And all of those participating contractors have specialized skills and are licensed and screened. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to produce is the ability for all homeowners throughout the county to be able to achieve quality, affordable upgrades. So with that, I'm going to pass it off to Ashley, who's going to tell you a little bit how it works and what types of eligible measures we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Angie. Every time I look at this slide, I wonder why none of the contractors that I work with look like that one there. So as Angie mentioned, we're trying to make home upgrades more affordable for local homeowners. And we know that when it comes to home energy upgrades, a one-size-fits-all approach really isn't going to work. So what we've been doing with Empower is we've developed four different packages for homeowners to choose from so that they can find one that works best for them. There's a basic and an advanced package, which are actually rebate or eligible for rebates that are offered through the investor-owned utilities. And the basic package is a set measure approach where a homeowner would install 7 measures, and in exchange for that, they would reduce their energy use by about 10% as long as they don't change behavior after they install the equipment, and they would receive a flat rebate of $1,000. So that's meant to be kind of an easy on-ramp to energy efficiency. And then there's the advanced package, and this uses what is called a whole house approach to energy efficiency. So a homeowner would work with the contractor. They would actually come into the home and use diagnostic tools like a blower door or an infrared camera to determine what the root cause of problems are in the home, and then develop a pretty comprehensive scope of work to address those issues. And energy savings could be anywhere from 10% to 45%, but what this package is really trying to do is drive homeowners to do more by sweetening the rebate, which is why you see that homeowners could access up to $4,500. At a meeting earlier today, I mistakenly said $45,000, so that seemed pretty attractive to some people at the meeting that I was at, so I quickly corrected myself. And then this is FlexPath is a package that we just recently developed. As we started to roll out the program and talk to homeowners, we were hearing that there were a lot of people that had already maybe done some measures to their home and they just wanted to do maybe one or two other things, or they just didn't have the ability to do a more full-scale project. So the FlexPath program is a menu-based approach where homeowners can pick and choose which measures will work best for them. And as long as they choose 2 or more measures and achieve a point score of 100 or more, then they're going to get a $1,000 incentive and reduce their energy use by at least 10%, in many cases much more. And then finally, we have our solar water heating package. This is for people who want to offset gas or electric use related to their hot water system. There's some pretty generous rebates available right now, up to $2,700, although we're seeing about $1,500 is sort of the average. And then some tax credits, a 30% tax credit that's making this a popular package. In addition, we allow homeowners to add solar photovoltaics to either of these packages. We really try to take the approach of reducing and then producing, which is why we allow solar at the end of energy efficiency packages. And then, of course, homeowners can qualify for the incentives that are available through the Green Business Program. So a lot of these projects are going to be rather expensive, and rebates are great. They're going to reduce a lot of your upfront project costs, but homeowners are still going to be left with some additional costs that they're going to have to pay for. And I realize this slide may be a little hard to read, so I apologize for that. But in terms of financing, there's a few different options out there. We've developed a loan through the Empower program. There's HELOCs, and then there's some other unsecured products like a credit card. And what people are usually most familiar with is the HELOC. And there's some good rates that you can get through your HELOC, and that seems to be kind of an anchor that homeowners use when they're referencing the terms and the starting rates. But as we started to get into developing this program, we realized that there's really some issues with the HELOC. First of all, it's secured, so you have to put your home up. So if you were going to default on your loan for some reason, your home would be in jeopardy. There's closing costs. You might have to have a assessment done on your home. You may not even be able to qualify if you don't have equity in your home, which is an issue nowadays, and is one of the main reasons why we developed the Empower loan, which is unsecured. We have a grant from the Department of Energy that has provided us funds that we basically use as a backstop against default. And it allows us to get really good terms for an unsecured product and really good rates. So homeowners can qualify for up to $25,000 in a loan, and the terms range from 5 years to 15 years, depending on the amount of their projects. And the starting rate is 5.9%, which is obviously a little bit higher than a HELOC, but when you compare it to other unsecured products where you're looking at 13 to 30%, it looks a lot better when you compare it to something like that, and when you realize that there's no closing costs involved, and that sometimes you can get a turnaround in terms of approval in as quick as 30 minutes and not longer than a day. So it's a very quick process. And also wanted to note that we want to make these types of upgrades affordable and accessible to all types of homeowners. And we're serving people with credit scores as low as 590, which is a little bit unique for a product like this. So who can perform this type of work? Well, only Empower SBC participating contractors are. And we do this because we really want to protect the integrity of the program, as well as protect our local homeowners and make sure that they are working with contractors that can provide really quality work. So all of the contractors on our list have a special certification from an organization called the Building Performance Institute. It's called a Building Analyst Certification, and it's training that they receive to really be able to look at the home in a holistic way and understand how one thing that they might do to a home could affect other aspects of the home, and occupancy safety is a key hallmark of that certification. They also have to meet certain insurance guidelines and be in good standing with the Contractor State License Board. So how does the homeowner get started? Well, we've put a lot of thought into this, and we've tried to make it as streamlined as possible. What we suggest to homeowners in terms of the way forward is that first they scope their project. So they're going to pick one of those packages that I referenced earlier. They're going to work with one of the contractors on our list, and then they're going to submit all of the necessary applications. And when I say applications, I mean applications for the rebate, whatever necessary permits they need to pull, as well as an application for the financing if they choose to take the financing.
And then they're going to install their upgrades and sit back and wait for their rebate from either the county or the utility and funding from their local credit union, which is either Coast Hills or Ventura County Credit Union, who are our partners. So as we have started to receive projects through the program, we're seeing some commonalities in terms of the measures that are most common, and air sealing, insulation, duct sealing, furnaces, water heaters, and windows seem to be the most popular. I don't know if that sort of jives with what you are all seeing here. And for the most part, these measures have really limited aesthetic impact. You know, the things are happening behind the scenes in the attic or the roof. Attic, roof, walls, areas where you can't really see from the outside. And you can see from these pictures why these might be popular measures. It's really not uncommon for us to, or one of our contractors, to go into a home and see absolutely no insulation, or to see big penetrations that have been made in walls and then for piping, and then the cable guy comes along and says, oh, look, somebody already made a hole for me. Let me just kind of go along with that, and I'll do my work through there too. Or homeowners who are complaining about rooms that are not being heated properly, and then we see that their ducts are completely unconnected. So these are some pretty common issues. Now, we understand that there are some measures that might have some aesthetic impacts. For example, windows, cool roofs, or solar. So what are we doing to mitigate the possible aesthetic impact? Basically, what we do is we work with our contractors on our projects, and we require them to comply with all federal, state, and local laws and permitting requirements. We also require that they pull all necessary building permits. And then we are very concerned about historic buildings, so we require that they comply with the State Historic Preservation Office requirements. And you may be familiar with some of those requirements. All of our participating contractors have to sign a participation agreement where they basically say that they will comply by all of these rules. And then homeowners who have a home that is 45 years or older are required to disclose that on their application paperwork. And if their home is older than that, there's a process that we have to go through to review it. And we haven't come across that yet where we've triggered SHPO, but I'm sure we will sooner or later, and we'll comply with whatever is necessary. I just want to close by thanking all of our partners. In addition to the city of Goleta, all of the other cities have been wonderful. Of course, not as wonderful as the city of Goleta. And then the Department of Energy, our local utilities, and our local lenders, Coast Hills and Ventura County Credit Union. Are there any questions that we can answer about the program? I don't know if it's good or bad if there's no questions at the end.
This is one probably for Cindy more than you. The city was embarking on an Empower program to analyze their facility here. Am I remembering right? Did that happen? What came of that?
I don't think it was through Empower.
Ah.
It may have just been our advanced planning folks are in the process of developing the climate action plan, and so it may have been part of the energy efficiency action plan that they developed.
Right.
They did audit of the city facilities and came up with some measures that they would recommend for additional improvements and that sort of thing. So that is part of the climate action plan development.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I could ask just how long the and thank you for the presentation, first of all, and how long has the program been in effect, and what kind of response have you received in Santa Barbara County as far as single-family residences signing up for it?
Take that one. So we got launched officially at the end of 2011, so we've been going a little bit over a year. We've been tracking some data. Recently, we have been able to track about 2,300 people have reached out to the program showing interest, meaning they've called us, wrote to us, showed up to an event. Our events are very well attended, and we've had a lot of them. So people have actually taken a proactive step towards starting an upgrade. There are many projects that we know are in progress, a lot of them in bid process, which takes a long time, a long lead time is what we're finding. And we calculate or estimate at this point the number of jobs completed is around 69. So plenty of more work to do to collect data and lots more upgrades out there to do. We're just getting started.
One of the things we're noticing is that it takes a bit of time for homeowners to move forward with these types of projects. We're seeing, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 months, which, you know, I don't know is something that we anticipated initially, but they are taking their time to, you know, make really good decisions about what they want to do with their home. And so we're starting to see a lot more projects come in from people that we made connections with very early on in the program. So there's a lot of lessons learned in developing this program that I think will help us when, as we go forward with other areas as well.
How long is this program scheduled to run?
Right now, we don't. Well, actually, you know, why don't you answer that?
So Energy Upgrade California, the part of the rebate program that we talked about, that's a statewide program, and that's really dependent on the utilities. And they've recently, the Public Utility Commission, committed to about another 10 years of that program. So you can imagine there'll be some rebates around for a while. Empower as a program has separate funding. Part of it actually came through ARA. And so we are coming to the close of our initial funding and in the process of it getting more funding, which we have been offered, but we just need to go through the process of accepting it. So we think we'll be around for quite a while, but stay tuned.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your presentation and continued success.
Thank you.
All right. With that, let's see. Nothing for all those. And item M, announcements by members. Anybody have anything? Well, then with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you, members of the DRB.
Right under your